We're talking about some of these formerly considered to be mythical beasts like the Kraken, the giant squid. And so we have one that had washed up on the beach, and you were talking about another species, too?
Well, right. Just recently, another species that they call the Mesonychotuthis or colossal squid was discovered, and a live specimen was actually caught, the first live specimen ever really caught of a giant squid of any type, about a year ago, February 22nd, actually, last year. And it was much bigger than the giant squid, over twice as big. It would have had, as an adult, this was a fairly young one, only 33 feet long, but an adult would have had a body the size of a city bus, huge, huge creature. Mm. So the Kraken, you know, this monstrous creature of fantasy and imagination that we saw in Pirates of the Caribbean, for instance, turns out to be real, you know? And I think that's wonderful. I really think it's marvelous. So the question is, how many other things are there out there that we don't know yet or that we may have heard about
sure.
or reported that may be real, or they may turn out to be something different, you know, that we haven't imagined?
Let's talk about some of those things that have washed up on various beaches, too, that is also in your book.
Oh, sure. Well, there's two major categories. There's the curious carcasses of creatures that look like some kind of plesiosaur, but they're always very badly decayed. But they're always reported all the time as, oh, people have found this plesiosaur washed up. Well, a plesiosaur is a prehistoric aquatic reptile from the Cretaceous era, the age of dinosaurs, over 65 million years ago. And they had a body somewhat like a shellless turtle and a long serpentine neck. And they varied. Some of the necks were fairly short, like a giraffe's type proportions, and others were very long, like a long snake-like. And, of course, these have been extinct for millions and millions of years, and there hasn't really been any reason to think that they've continued to survive, and I explain why in here. But there are these mysterious carcasses, and they wash up, and when people study them or look at them or draw them or describe them, they describe this body with these four large flippers and a long tail and a very long neck with a little small skull on the end of it. And it certainly sounds like a plesiosaur, but they're always in such decrepit condition that it's pretty hard to tell much. Very few of these have been preserved. It's amazing how many times people have had a carcass of something right there in front of them, and then they've just lost it, you know, let it wash away in the next tide, you know, or not preserved it or tried to save it. There are many, many of these kind of things in the history. But in this particular case, some of these have been analyzed, and tissue samples have been taken and parts of the remains, and they always, every single time, turn out to be the remains of basking sharks, which is a huge shark. It's the world's largest fish. It's well, right up there with the whale shark. But the particular thing about it is it has enormous jaws and gill structure that are just huge because it eats krill like a whale, like the baleen whale
sure.
do. And when the body dies and rots away, the first thing that drops off and disassociates itself with the rest of the body is these enormous gills and jaws. And that leaves nothing but the neck and the top of the skull. You know, and which is fairly long and with a tiny little skull. And it does look uncannily like that. And I've put diagrams in the book to show how this process works and how the anatomy and the decay goes. And it'll be interesting to see if the next time these things are washed up that people will be on top of what it really is right away. So that's one. Another one are the blobs, these mysterious, amorphous, gelatinous, but tough blobs of stuff that have washed up. They have often have long tentacles attached to them, and people have thought that these are remains of some kind of gigantic octopus. I mean, they're quite huge. They weigh several tons in some cases, and they've washed up on beaches from Florida to Australia, and some places very commonly. They show up quite a few times in certain areas, and there's been lots of controversy about these over the years. I mean, as I say, they've given the most popular interpretation has been that they were some kind of giant octopus, but nobody can ever find any real parts, no eyes or jaw, right. beaks or organs or anything really, just the general form and shape. And that was what was odd about them. And it turned out finally when they got the chance to be able to do some real tissue studies and DNA studies of these things that they are masses of sperm whale blubber that appear to be the remnants perhaps from whaling. I suspect that a lot of them come from stuff that is discarded in whaling. But
pushed off the deck of the ship.
Right, exactly. And the long tentacle parts are the parts of the blubber that go down between the ribs, and the huge mass is the part that goes over the back of the neck. And again, I've provided diagrams in there to show how the decay of the blubber of a sperm whale will produce these kinds of images. So we get things out there, and we have to interpret them. There's the canby creatures, these strange little bipedal creatures that have washed up on shores, and they're described as being reddish, and they have 2 feet with flippers and no arms, and, you know, big eyes and a huge mouth and gills, and they weird-looking things. But what these actually turn out to be is a mysterious and large type of fish called an anglerfish that has these 2 enormous side fins that are jointed. They have an elbow to them. And if you were to, you know, hang it up by the jaw, by the head, these side fins would hang down and look like short, stubby feet with flippers on them, you know. So we have this constant thing of trying to interpret what we're seeing. You know, we may really see something, but the interpretation of it has to use a little imagination. It's like the earliest interpretations of dinosaur remains gave rise to all sorts of fantastic creatures, but we're still refining that. The earliest reconstructions that were serious scientific reconstructions of dinosaurs in the 19th century are a far cry from how we understand those same creatures today.
Frequently mixing 2 different species together into one skeleton. But let me ask, what does this have to do with wizardry in that sense? How does this inform wizardry to know all of these animals and then to find out their actual scientific basis?
Well, that goes both ways, you see. A good part of wizardry is what we call lore, the gray wizardry department of it. And that's the stories and the legends and the myths. And these have shaped our culture and how we've interpreted things. For example, I just watched a documentary special on the History Channel the other night with a folklorist named Adrian Meyer, who discussed how many of the mythical creatures described in ancient Greece and attested by remains and bones and skeletons that were exhibited in temples and places were early remains of fossil creatures that had to be interpreted somehow or other. But the stories that gave rise to these and that were justified to explain them, for example, a good one is the Cyclops story. I mean, here you've got, you know, imagine you're in a, you know, some tavern in the Aegean, and the door flings open, and this ragged-looking, shaggy guy, you know, covered with, you know, barnacles, comes staggering in and says, "Oh man, have I had a wild adventure? You know, fill my flagon, and I'll tell you all about it." And you go, "Okay, sure, Odysseus. What happened to you?" You know, and so he tells the story: "I went to this island, and this monster, you know, with only one eye, it was huge. It was like 20 feet tall. And, you know, it killed my men, and I'm the only one who survived." And he goes on and on with this. And he finally says, "And you can go back to that island and you can find the remains of it. It's, you know, I left the bones of it there, and you can go back and find the skull. And someday somebody does, and by George, there it is. There is the skull of the Cyclops." And what they've got is the skull of a mastodon or a mammoth whose central nasal opening is in the middle of the face and looks for all the world like a gigantic eye in the human skull, because the eye sockets for elephants are on the side, on the zygomatic arch, and are really inconspicuous as such. But when you've got the proof, there's the evidence, you know. So he may have gone there, he may have seen this, said, "Oh boy, I'm going to tell a story about this, and next time people come out here, they'll have my story." But these stories become embedded in our legend, in our lore. They get used as examples. They become anecdotes. They become fables.